Hello world, welcome to the PG.biz podcast with me, your usual host, Brian Bagwell, but we're going multiplayer this time around. We're doing something a little bit different and introducing you to the rest of the PG.biz editorial crew. We have three of the stalwarts here this afternoon, Craig, Daniel and Aaron. Hello folks, welcome on board.
Good morning.
Good to be here.
So before we go any further, can you tell our lovely listeners who you are and what you do at PG.biz? Craig.
I'm the head of content at pocketgamer.biz, and I also do content for Pocket Gamer Connects as well.
Fantastic. Daniel.
I'm Daniel Griffiths. I'm the editor of pocketgamer.biz.
Fantastic. And Aaron.
Yes, so I'm Aaron Astle, and I'm the news editor on pocketgamer.biz.
It's great to have you here. Thank you all for joining us. How are we feeling about the new news-based podcast?
I can't wait to get chatting.
Excited. It seems that there's a lot going on, and whether we can keep all this down to 40 minutes, we shall do our best.
We absolutely shall, and I will keep things moving forward at full steam. Now, before we jump into the week's news and headlines, we have to say that some of the things that are going on are PGC related. So it's the middle of March, so starting next week, we have the next Pocket Gamer Connects event taking place in San Francisco. Craig, you've been quite instrumental in pulling that together.
That's bigging me up quite a lot there. I think big shout out to my colleague Charlie, who's kind of putting together the agenda for that and bringing a lot of the speakers. Yeah, we've got a lot of really cool people coming to the show. We've got Scopely, just name one. We've got Embrace. We've got a really good lineup, and I'm looking forward to going there and then off to GDC.
Fantastic! And then we have the Dubai Game Expo coming up later on. What can you tell us about that?
We're in the early stages of putting that together, but again, you know, we're hoping to get some big speakers there, and we'll have more to share very soon.
And we will, of course, have links to both of those events in the show notes and in the article that you can find on pg.biz. So let's dive into the news. Craig, it's been a heck of a week in terms of layoffs, financial, and a little bit of Apple Arcade.
Yes, so as much as I said I couldn't wait to get started on this, unfortunately I'll start off the news with layoffs. So EA has laid off 5% of staff as it cut licensing deals and is closing offices. So it already earlier in the week said that it was shutting down MLB Tap Sports and F1 Mobile Racing, which I think were the Glue and Codemasters games. Mm-hmm. It said it'd be focused on its owned IP more. Star Wars FPS has been cancelled. And then it said it will also focus on sports and massive online communities. Whatever that means, I guess, just games as a service, Apex Legends, maybe. I'm not quite sure. I was just thinking, I'm kind of curious where mobile really fits into this. I still questioned why they bought Glue at all. Seemed like mm-hmm. a potentially good move to bring in the foundations for a real mobile business, which I think a few years ago was kind of argued that they needed because their mobile business was just going nowhere. But now they're pulling back from licensing, which was a key area for Glue, obviously, that Kim Kardashian, a bunch of other licenses, some more successful than others. But generally, they did a pretty good job with that. And then also just thinking that they've cancelled mobile games like Apex Legends Mobile, which was, I think, basically done. But they just cancelled mm-hmm. it. They also cancelled Battlefield Mobile. Just seemed very odd to spend billions of dollars on something that they still aren't particularly invested in. And yeah. I wondered if part of this, even if it's a small part, is perhaps a reaction to that. So, it's a real shame that they're laying off 5%. I think some people have said that that amounts to 670 staff based on the number of employees they had a year ago. Mm-hmm. So
it's just that it's really. The machinations of big business, isn't it? This, you know, they spend over $2 billion on Glue and then to kind of throw it all away, it seems. You know, I've been getting emails from fans of both the MLB and the F1 series demanding that something be done. You know, they were very happy with the way things were going. They were very happy with the game, and they just feel undersupported and let down. So for those two games to go earlier in the week, and then for EA to follow it up with, "Oh, we're getting rid of 5% of our staff." And when EA get rid of 5%, that's a very significant number. The actual number is, you know, yeah, it's rumored to be about 670. But yeah, it's disappointing. I can't work out what their mobile play is. It feels like, you know, they spent $2 billion a couple of years ago and ticked it off as done, and then they've just sat and done nothing, and now they're not interested. It just seems contrary to what everybody else is doing, and the moves being made elsewhere. So we had an interesting chat this morning. You know, we were talking about whether this move to who needs the MLB license, we can just make our own baseball game. Who needs an F1 license, we can just make our own F1 licensing game. Whether that happens, they can do that. Whether they can go as far as create their own Star Wars game and call it War of the Stars, I have absolutely no idea. But you know, yeah, it's after the success of their FC game, after they kicked off FIFA, you know, maybe that's the plan. I don't know, but yeah, it's a world of confusion at EA on mobile right now.
I think the FIFA deal was just pretty unique, right? It was FIFA had kind of in game just become synonymous with the game, not actually what FIFA is, right? Like the governing body of world football. So I don't think they could do the same at all with like Madden or MLB, yeah, or really any other license.
The FIFA license used to be the way to get all the names and all the likenesses these days, but you can do separate deals these days. You know, and they've proven that as far as selling units and having players playing their game, yeah, people don't mind. You know, it was at the time, it was what on earth are EA doing, getting rid of FIFA? But it turns out it was fine. You know, whether they've got big head and feel like they can do that with everything, time will tell. But yeah, I'm confused.
Interesting that one of their focuses is sports, and they cancelled MLB.
Yeah, but by all accounts, you know, it might not be the biggest sport in the UK, for example, but America and Japan, you know, it's a big thing to walk away from.
So there's also more layoffs news. So Sony Interactive Entertainment axed 900 staff across the globe. That represented about 8% of the company's headcount. Several PlayStation studios impacted. That was, unfortunately, the closure of London Studio, which I think did PlayStation Home and PSVR stuff. So that's a real shame. I've been there before, and there was definitely a lot of talented people kind of working on lots of new stuff. And then you've got layoffs at Fire Sprite Studio and other reductions in the UK. So the UK taking a big hit on that.
I'm very sad to see PlayStation in London going. Because, yeah, like you say, I've been beckoned to that building a number of times to see the next big thing. I think to an extent, and this is going to sound crazy, I think to an extent they got the rough end of the deal because they were always on point to deliver software that showed off the hardware. So they were SingStar and iToy. I'm going back years now, aren't I? And more recently, PlayStation VR. You know,
show your age there, Daniel.
Yeah, sorry about that. Does anyone remember SingStar and iToy back in the day? But they were like kind of like, here's the hardware. You've got to make it look good. You've got to make it sing and make it fly. And you know, I think you know a lot of the sort of the innovation in games and you know creating popular games that weren't mainstream breakthrough devices or hardware demos was left to other parties. So yeah, there was a real hotbed of talent there, and I just feel like they got the shaft having to do VR stuff, really, and that's always that they seem to have done. You know, it's sad. They should have been allowed to do what they wanted to do rather than it feels like VR2 is and the closing of the studio, it feels like it's a done deal now. It's like, oh, that was that then. You know, it's sad, and there's a lot of good folks there, and you know, I hope they find that they find gainful employment somewhere else.
It's a very strange state of affairs when you see the global market and mobile becoming such a huge part of that enormous bottom line, you know, well over $200 billion in revenue this year projected to be. Having studios that are actively backing away from mobile is very odd. And as you say, the impact of VR, XR, AR, you know, all of the various immersive technologies has yet really to be realized in any kind of consumer sense. It's lovely. It's very impressive. If you've tried the Vision Pro, apparently it's incredible, but there's no demand. So trying to build that demand, I think, was where Sony really tried to sort of innovate with the PSVR. But it's another sad day and another huge swathe of industry people laid off.
I mean, I could go into it more, but I wonder how much PlayStation actually wanted to do a VR headset, if that was a Sony thing or a PlayStation thing, and then just how invested they were, how big they thought it would be. It's never going to replace the actual console, and it's not big enough to do anything kind of serious for Sony's bottom line. So the whole thing's a bit confusing to me. It's a real shame that all those stuff kind of get affected by that. And then lastly, in layoffs news, but last but not least, global layoffs at Gameloft as staff in Ukraine and Canada confirmed redundancies. So at least 38 were laid off in Lviv. I think you reported on that, Daniel. And there's as yet unconfirmed numbers in Toronto. So
yeah, there's been an official confirmation that yes, we are doing this. It's part of our global strategy to consolidate and redress where we're spending money and what our future investment is going to be. It's just sad. It's not as heavyweight as some of these big numbers that we've been bandying about. But again, this is a former flying high game company that's reining it in and taking the foot off the gas at the minute. There's a lot of it about.
Yeah, just so many layoffs, seemingly stories every week at the moment. Seems to be the trend. In other news, so Playtika is no longer up for sale and is promising more mergers and acquisitions, perhaps kind of not what everyone else is doing. I'll be interested to see how that goes. So revenue was down to 2.57 billion, as was net income, which decreased to 235 billion. The company cited ongoing uncertainty in Israel and Ukraine as a reason to pause the company's evaluation of strategic alternatives. And it's now earmarked $600 million to $1.2 billion for acquisitions over the next 3 years. This one's a strange one to me. So I don't want to go into some of those factors that they've stated. Obviously, they're very serious. But they went public a few years ago, and then please, someone correct me if I'm wrong. I'm pretty sure in short shrift they were like, well, we're now looking to sell. So I guess that didn't seem to go very well for them. And it kind of seems to be like maybe they just couldn't find a buyer.
Yeah.
Either no one wanted them, or it's just not the right time for anyone to buy a company that big. And obviously the reasons that they've stated.
Yeah, you see this with M&A strategies is if we can't create a hit product that's making money and people are loving it and they're throwing money at us, what we can do is we can buy another company and get bigger. And so if you buy a company every month, you get bigger and bigger and bigger, and you own more and more properties. And the end game of that is that you can then sell the company, and you can walk away with a huge profit, and manage to do that all without ever making a popular product that people love and throw money at you. So I'm not an expert in big business, but it's one way to play the game. So that Playtika tried to hoover up Rovio and failed. They've been hoovering places up, and they started their strategic alternatives process, which is, look at us, haven't we got a lot of stuff, aren't we valuable, right? And they've ended that. I don't know, I don't want to say anything too harsh, but yes, they are We're no longer for sale. We're gonna because we want to make a go of this, and we promise even more mergers and acquisitions. So yeah, I you know, as a fan of games and the business around games, yeah, I'd like to see them create something that's brilliant and is a global smash hit. But instead, they continue their M&A policy, should we say?
I mean, M&A could be a really, like, it could be a really good strategy, right? You bring in good companies that are growing. Like, Zynga did it really well, in a sense. That, you know, they acquired, like, Small Giant Games, Gram Games, and then those titles kind of blew up, even though they're already pretty big, I think, at the acquisition kind of phase. And then eventually Zynga, well, which actually never recovered its share price since its IPO, but it did at least raise it, if such things matter. But and then they managed to obviously sell to Take-Two. So you can grow it as long as you integrate them well and make the most out of the games that you get, and then hope for a good new release. That doesn't always happen. But Playtech is pretty good at making the most out of, I think, the games it has. I won't say too much more on that, but yeah, they're pretty good at doing that, and we'll see who they acquire in the coming years. I'd be surprised if they make a major acquisition in the next few months, given how things are.
Yeah, mergers and acquisitions are down anyway at the moment. They were down quite significantly in spending and just the number of acquisitions in 2023. So I guess it all ties in together with the layoffs and stuff. No one, or very few people, have the funds they used to for all the big acquisitions.
Well, yeah, things that I don't really know what I'm talking about when I say, but, you know, obviously high inflation, high interest rates, not much money going around. People, unfortunately, making cuts, and there's lots of reasons that we could go into for that, but that's probably another whole podcast in itself. So I wanted to move on to kind of my last bit of news, which was Inside Apple Arcade, Axe Games, declining payouts, disillusioned studios, and an uncertain future. So this was on Mobile Gamer. Multiple sources, including developers, had their say about the service. One developer said there was a smell of death around Arcade. Sources said payouts had been declining. One did, though, say that premium games have become viable on mobile because of the service. I've always had many thoughts about Apple and Arcade. It was basically built as a way to bring services to Apple's business at a time when it was starting TV, film, and music subscriptions. And I think that was at a time when there was also, for some reason, some questions about hardware growth. So services was like the big thing at the time. And they just threw out Apple Arcade. Oh, we could do this. But I just don't get why they did it at all. Why they bothered. They don't like games. This just fitted into that strategy. And I guess someone somewhere thought, well, we should do this since we're doing it for everything else.
It nicely joined the rest of the portfolio of offerings, didn't it? And, you know, you can buy an Apple One subscription where you get everything together all in one. It's neat. I mean, I always thought that Apple Arcade was like kind of a bit of a loss leader for them. They liked the idea of having it. They liked the idea of it completing, as you say, rounding out that package. I don't think they took it very seriously. You know, to an extent, I go along with the Apple don't like games thing. But you know, I was like, yeah, of course they're not making any money on it. No, you know, everyone's they're paying people up front. Everyone's happy. So yeah, this story is quite interesting. I guess if you go to somebody, you're always going to find people that aren't being paid enough and aren't happy with the way things are going. So yeah, for those people to come to the surface and contribute to this story, that was interesting. I guess it was always going to happen. But yeah, no, it has revealed some interesting aspects. Like I say, I figured that Apple were sort of running Apple Arcade as a bit of a charity fund project, but turns out Apple are serious about making big money, and we'll put the boot in. As for people making the decision to go to Apple Arcade rather than, you know, pursue other channels, yeah, it's not good news for Apple Arcade. It does rather paint them in a bad light. But yeah, that interesting smell of death comment, we'll have to see What happens? Are they going to start paying people more? Are they going to give more favourable terms? Or are they just going to quietly let it rot away? Yeah, interesting times.
I think it'll be the latter. I think they'll quietly let it rot away. There's like a business that they're not paying much attention to. They don't care about it. I think some of the strategies for it have been crazy. I mean, initially, it was let's just build a service business, but let's bring premium games. But, you know, ultimately on mobile, people free to play one, right? That people will like free to play. So it's kind of crazy to me that Apple has decided it hates it when it's actually the consumer that's decided we like this stuff.
I think you're right. Apple hated the idea of free to play. I think they must have said, if we don't do something, free to play is going to absolutely dominate. And so we'll create this, and then everyone will go, oh yeah, I see. Too if late. I pay you a subscription, oh, this is much better. You're so right, Apple. And that hasn't happened.
There are good games on the service. If you have it and you like that stuff, it does provide good value. I think this is a thing, subscriptions at large. I question if they actually work for games. It's not really the way people play games. You pick a game and then you play that. You play one, two games at a time, at least me anyway, or I just go back to the same live service game. So, I mean, slightly hypocritical. I have an Xbox Game Pass, but I end up just playing Age of Empires on it. It's kind of a total waste. Like, I don't end up dipping into all these other games, because that's just not how you do it.
Yeah,
I think over time, Game Pass, arcades, Netflix, I can see them all having kind of dwindling payouts for developers. I think these things benefit, in theory, the platform holder the most. Obviously, they have to put a big investment in to scale that. But I think in the end, it benefits them the most. And then they could just have this black box of, oh, we'll give you this payout based on this. I think Netflix model is different as the one front, I think. But I just question whether the whole subscription thing will ever work for games. And I think in a few years, things will look very different.
As we've already established, I am quite old fashioned, so I like the idea of there being a market with games, and they are the absolute top quality that they can be. They are sold at a price that justifies the amount of work that's gone into it. You pay your money and you absolutely rinse that $50 or $60, getting the absolute most out of the game. And when it's finished, you say that was brilliant, and then you go back in the shop and you buy another one. I still quite like that. And so, yeah, I'm not sure whether the Spotify all-you-can-eat style thing applies to games. I think it encourages people to kind of dip in and play something for 20 seconds and then go, meh, and then go into something else and then have exactly the same experience. And then when somebody says, what do you think of games these days? You go, well, they're all a bit useless. Whereas if you pay $60 for something by your favorite studio on your favorite topic and you play it for hours every day and get your money's worth, I think you have a much more positive impression as to the quality of games and where games are heading. So, yeah, I wonder about subs and the long-term profitability and workability of it.
Yeah, I guess as games also get more expensive to make, and as, you know, with graphical improvements and just all around, you know, it seems like every generation, roughly, the price of games goes up. So I guess, would the subscription services keep increasing in price, you know, over the years? Because otherwise, surely they're going to be, you know, less and less viable if they've got to keep a really cheap price to keep people subscribed. But if the games start costing more,
it's another reason to be anti-subs. It is. You know, the best example I can give is when Kojima had to walk away from Konami, because Konami were basically saying, mate, you're taking too long and costing too much money. Can't you just do what all the other companies are doing, and we can do these things quicker and cheaper? And they're making money. And Kojima, you know, he basically had to walk away from it, because he wanted to do it takes me 5 years and costs tens of millions of dollars to create a genuine AAA, quadruple A product, and that's what I do. So yeah, I those sorts of people and those sorts of games still need to exist. So in a sense, subservices are the enemy of the big landmark game that happens, you know, every 5 years. You know, GTA 6, for example, being on the horizon and being you know, certainly in my mind at the minute, I absolutely can't wait for that to happen. So anything that threatens those huge, earth-shattering global game moments, yeah, I'm not happy with it.
Well, I think this is one of those topics we could spend an entire podcast on by itself. And it's interesting because we do have a sector that is increasingly schizophrenic with the top-end AAA, quadruple-A market, and then the hyper-casual, you know, entirely at odds with the whole approach, not just to design development, but to the user and the player as well. And it will be interesting to see how this shakes down in terms of streaming games and whether we go for the buffet style approach like Netflix or Spotify, or whether there is space for other business models and those landmark games, in a way that we see, you know, with movie releases versus, you know, the content that goes straight to Spotify, straight to DVD, as we used to say back in the '80s. But let's move on swiftly before we get into the weeds of the whole business models, hybrid monetization, and all the things that we know and love on the site. Where are we going next?
I got some stuff. I got some newsy things.
Fabulous.
I want to talk Apple facing pressure from its major shareholders to disclose its AI plans. Very serious business, lots of serious investors and lots of big money involved here, but it still made me chuckle out loud. As our resident Apple fanboy, don't beat me up, it just fundamentally meant it showed a misunderstanding of what Apple are and what Apple do, that these people with all this money really, yeah, they really should know better. The short version is that they want Apple to start talking about AI and the work that they're doing in AI and come clean about what they're doing. And they're citing all kinds of, oh, Apple might be breaking privacy rules. We might be heading into trouble later on. You need to start talking about Apple. The real reason why they want Apple to start talking about AI is because if you talk about AI, the share price goes up. And
exactly.
Apple being slick and quiet and waiting until their thing is finished is bugging the hell out of them. They are sat there. These investors are sat there saying, why didn't I buy Nvidia shares? Why aren't Apple speaking up? So they're basically, this whole thing is like kind of like, oh, we're worried about privacy and you know, you need to come clean. It's like, no, Tim Cook, start talking about AI right now because I want to make some money. That's the long and short of it. It will happen. WWDC, I'm going to stick my neck out, and lots of people have. It's not an original fault, I know. There will be an AI bent to WWDC. We might see a Siri that can operate a boil an egg timer properly. Who knows? It might happen. And then we might see the iPhone 16 with on-device AI, which we've already seen, you know, from Mobile World Congress and the likes of Qualcomm talking about on-device stuff. So yeah, on-device AI and a big deal coming from Apple. It's going to happen, and these investors just need to chill out. The big bucks will come, fellas. Don't worry about it.
Just funny. Like the investors, are like, play buzzword bingo. Just do it. just say metaverse or. I guess they're already saying spatial computing. Sorry, they reframed that. So they'll say AI or reframe it. I don't know. It's completely obvious why that's happening.
Yeah, because a couple of months ago, or it might not even be that long, but recently Microsoft, said that there's some AI stuff going on, and that was basically it. And then they overtook Apple for the first time in a few years for, overall value. Yeah. So, yeah, again, if Apple just say AI, maybe they'll soar off ahead
again.
These
people never heard of the Gartner hype curve. You know, the trough of disillusionment can't be far away, but it's a fair point. It is a very fair point. And Daniel, moving again swiftly onwards, some updates from the world of the pink and plastic side of things.
Yeah, this is a big one that caught my eye. I like it when a plan comes together, basically. So this is Mattel doing a Barbie game. So where's the big deal in that? But it's Mattel doing a Barbie game with Rollic, owned by Zynga, who are owned by Take-Two, and the small matter that Barbie is just about to nudge past $1.5 billion earnings from the movie last year. So yeah, this is big names coming together and getting serious. There are Barbie games out there. I've never played them, but they are out there. I believe that they're excellent products, but they are small fry to what's going to happen. I think this is a clean sweep. This is a new game, just like Monopoly Go. Who would have, think about Monopoly Go? It's like, oh, it's a Monopoly game, but it's like, you know, what's the big deal in that? That game is huge. That is everything coming together perfectly. And so I see them this combination of these big names with a big brand. Whatever this Barbie game's going to be, it's obviously going to be something hyper casual. It's very safe to predict. It's going to be a big money spinner. It's got an awful lot of weight behind it. So for me, that was kind of the biggest business story of the last week.
I mean, it's an interesting deal. I don't think it's going to be like a big game changer for anyone.
I think it's going to make money
do
for
well,
sure.
And then it will be on to the next one. I think it's like it's a good deal, but
who knows? It may well challenge, if not bring down the patriarchy. We can but hope.
Oh yeah, good point.
Yes. Other stuff I've got. Ex-Homer staff creating a UGC platform. Playmakers. I like Homer stuff. I like Homer staff. I believe in what they're doing. This is a suite of tools that any game developer can put into their game to create and encourage user-generated content. I'm a big fan of UGC-based stuff. You know, the democratization of game makers. Who's to say that game developers are really the best people for making games? And things like Roblox have shown that. So whether it'll come off, I don't know. It's got some big name investors behind it. Sebastian Bourget, the Sandbox, is in there. But the former Xbox France MD is in there too. They obviously believe in it. I believe in it. I definitely believe in UGC. They can create a platform where developers can create an avenue for their users to put content into games. I think that's good. I hope this comes off, and I hope that they make a go of it. Yeah, more UGC in games. The smartest people in the room are the people playing your games, not the guys making them, I think.
It's an interesting move, and it's something that we've seen with, the huge market leaders like Fortnite and Roblox. It's if you empower your users and give them a chance to feel like they're part of the whole community, the response can be great. So it will be interesting to see exactly where that one goes. But thank you so much, Daniel. Some very, very interesting things. And then, Arne, what's been catching your eye this week?
Yes, there's been quite a bit of game news going on. So Call of Duty Warzone Mobile is finally almost coming out. So it was announced way back in September 2022. And it's now got a March 21st release date for this year, which a lot of people are excited about. It's already got 50 million pre-registrations. It's looking like the wait will be worth
I,
it
I, I,
on the
it's about
developer side.
time that they kind of got this game. That's a crazy long time from the announcement to the launch. But the thing that fascinates me most is just how it's going to go up against Call of Duty Mobile. Feels like they kind of made Warzone maybe to get away from their partnership with Tencent and. Maybe, I don't know, maybe take a bigger share of the pie there. I'm not sure what the strategy was. But obviously Call of Duty Mobile is a very, very successful game. Activision said it made over $3 billion. That was last year. So yeah, see if they both do well, if Warzone kind of cannibalizes Call of Duty Mobile or it ends up like PUBG New State. Which, at
Right.
least at launch, didn't really do anything. I don't know what it's doing now.
Yeah. Well, it better be good. That's all I'll say. It better be good after all this wait. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see it kind of do battle with effectively itself, you know, and whether consumers can get their head around what's going on. We'll see. I wish them every luck, but yeah, it can't get to market soon enough, I don't think.
Yeah. So then moving on to one that's particularly exciting for me as a bit of a Pokemon fanatic. The Pokemon Company announced Trading Card Game Pocket this week, which is basically just the trading card game on mobile, which is surprising it didn't isn't happen it, earlier.
I think there was a version of it. I could be wrong.
I don't think it was a while back. Quite, because there's like an online kind of browser-based version. I think with that you'd like, when you collect the cards, you'd get a code you could then put in on your account and you'd get some stuff. Whereas this looks like, at least from what they've shown so far, you'll essentially be starting over from scratch and just getting digital versions of cards. And they're going to give everyone 2 packs for free every day. So basically there's no reason not to get the game and then probably end up spending for more packs.
I didn't realise that. That's a good one.
Yeah, so I was surprised when they announced that there are going to be, like daily free packs, but it does make sense to try and get people on board. They've said they're targeting essentially everyone with this. They want people that already play the card game to get on mobile, and they want it serving as an introduction to new people who I guess will then, from their point of view, ideally spend on mobile and get into the physical card game and just and continue to give all their money to all of Pokemon's multimedia ambitions.
Yeah, but well done them. When I saw this the other day, I was like, isn't this out already? But they bring back the trading cards. It's a good move. I wonder about the spurious addition of the word pocket on the end. Just as far as a game name goes, Pokemon Trading Card Game is great. Pokemon Trading Card Game Pocket just feels like, I don't know. Maybe there's a long history of pocket being an essential good word to have in your Japanese game.
Yeah. I mean, Pokemon comes from it's pocket monsters, but whether that actually plays into it, or it's just because your phone's in your pocket, I don't know.
Odd.
It is a bit of a long title.
It's just going to be the Pokemon game. There's either Pokemon Go or Pokemon Pocket. You're never going to lose money betting on Pokemon. It's a good move. And how did that do for the developer? And has that had any kind of impact on them after the announcement?
Yeah, so it's a trio of studios working on it. So there's the Pokemon Company, Creatures Inc., who were already in charge of the card game, and then DNA, who developed Pokemon Masters. After this announcement, DNA in particular saw a real surge in its shares. They've gone up 24.4% within a day after the announcement. Which is obviously impressive. And particularly recently their financials came out and their game profits had fallen dramatically. They were down 95% over the last 9 months. So I'm sure they're happy to have this announcement give them a little surge in shares.
Pokemon trading cards. It's the new AI. If you can't talk about AI, do a Pokemon trading card game, it seems.
The background to this is, I could just see, just a quick look, the share price created and then spiked back to where it was because of Pokemon, and then kind of fell down again. So I don't know what's going on at DNA. Investors weren't happy about something, and then now they're happy again because there's a license.
God bless Pikachu.
I mean, there's got to be big money, in the card game. It's like the physical cards, they've sold over 50 billion of the cards. So if they can do that with the physical product, merging that with the mobile market, yeah, there's got to be a lot of money to come.
Incredible. And we love a good Pokemon story. And then, last but not least, Aaron, I believe there's some good news coming out of India.
There is. So, Ludo King has now surpassed 1 billion downloads on the Play Store. So it's Gameshun. I don't know how they pronounce their name. Gameshun. Okay, thank you. Yeah, so they've done really well, especially considering they didn't start off in mobile. They shifted to it about 10 years ago now. And yeah, they've ended up making, you know, a mobile Ludo game, a bit like with the Monopoly thing. It's like you'd think, you know, it's a board game that's now on mobile. But yeah, it's done incredibly well. It's the first Indian mobile game to surpass a billion downloads. And over the years, they've made it kind of more and more of a mobile game rather than just Ludo on mobile. It's got a lot of like mini games in it, and they do kind of like seasonal events with different like dice and
because it had
themes and stuff. And
it had a billion downloads, but yeah, now it's just now it's a billion just on the Play Store. So yeah, it's isolating, giving people what they want and knowing your market. It's an
achievement. It's an achievement, and it certainly shows, you know, how many regions around the world are really kind of moving into the sector and, you know, stepping into the games market where they never, you know, potentially had a chance before. So great news for the studio, and great news, I guess, for the market in India. We're going to step forward into the Week in Views now, and I believe you've all been going through the headlines, the stories that you've written over the last few days, and you've come prepared. So, Craig, what's been on your mind? What's been in your inbox this week?
Just going to go for a bit about Unity, everyone's favourite topic in the industry.
Joy.
Unity shares fell 18% despite revenue growth to $2.2 billion in 2023. So revenue was actually up 57.2% year over year. Net losses, they reduced by 10% to $826 million. Mm-hmm. It was just a heavy loss. Unity said it would be limiting its professional services units to a few strategic engagements, and it will be exiting the hardware components of its multiplayer business. See, now we know some of its cost-cutting measures, and it kind of went into a little bit more detail. So they include 25% of its workforce being laid off, closing offices, cutting cloud hosting costs, and other measures that it said would reduce its annual operating expenses, non-GAAP, to $250 million. And this crazy Weta deal, the more I hear about it, the less it makes sense to me. That they spent loads of money on it, and now sounds like they've sold the license back. Mm-hmm. They sold the license for the tools back to WetaFX for $99 million. But that, which covered the losses in its Create Solutions division. It's insane. Its growth solutions business, sales were up 26% year over year, but flat from the previous quarter. It noted stiff competition, so app love it, and fallout from the runtime fee as challenges it was facing. Though it did later say that actually didn't notice much from the runtime fee fiasco, at least currently. The whole thing, I don't want to just like keep criticizing the company or you know, but to a degree it feels like, just bear with me, it feels like an Embracer situation in the sense that they've expanded ridiculously to the areas that they shouldn't have done. Revenue is increasing dramatically, but the point is, even when they instigate cost-cutting measures, they're currently still not actually covering their losses enough. I think it sounds like, you know, that maybe in a few quarters that might be a bit different. But yeah, it's not good. It was interesting to see the interim CEO, James Whitehurst. He talked a bit about the iSource acquisition, and he blamed the consolidation period between Unity and IronSource for the lack of competitiveness in the ad space, mm-hmm. and that they're extremely bullish, quote, for the year ahead, and that things are apparently now sorted there. You kind of think, like, is it, well, maybe it's too late. AppLovin has already, you know, grown and done tremendously well. And for what it's worth, I had a look that AppLovin's share price, market cap, is nearly double Unity's now.
Wow.
Unity is a market cap of $11.1 billion. This is at the time when I look. While AppLovin is valued at $19.4 billion. So take what you will from that. I think Unity has a bit of a mountain to climb with its ads business, in terms of at least being a lot more competitive with AppLovin. And obviously, and I think with its engine business, I'm not going to be like a big doomsday and say it's going to go away. It's Unity. Sure, they'll be fine. But I think when they say we haven't really seen an impact, I don't think we're going to see an impact for a couple of years, really. And that's when developers are going to get to license renewals, or they're finished on one game, they're going to be starting a new game, and they're going to be considering, do I want to be with Unity? I think people won't forget the whole runtime thing, which still exists. And I think that's still shaking confidence. I think what's going to matter going forward for Unity is that, okay, you've reduced your workforce dramatically, focusing on things that you should have been focusing on before. Mm-hmm. And will they now kind of actually make updates to the engine that developers actually want and fix the issues that developers were kind of complaining about? And maybe that'll bring back some trust. My last thing on that is last two things is, well, I have a bit of a concern when they keep, a couple times now it's been mentioned, the growth outside of games. Mm-hmm. That seems like I think they shouldn't say publicly, maybe. you've annoyed all these developers. Let's keep the focus on games for a while. Fix that before you now expand elsewhere. I'll be heading to GDC in March. So I'll be interested to see how I can't pronounce it. Unreal take advantage of this. Be really fascinated to see what their presence looks like at the show. I imagine it will be fairly substantial.
Yeah,
but that's my thoughts on the whole Unity situation.
Yeah, I feel for them. I really do. Like you say, they've gone in too many different directions all at once for too long, really. So this latest comment and the latest numbers would appear to be them recognizing that and reconciling it. It's a shame that they tried to write themselves with the runtime fee nonsense. And that just, you know, obviously they're looking at some sort of projection. They go, well, if we introduce this runtime fee, we'll be out of trouble. And all they did was cause more trouble. So yeah, I hope they get it together. But yeah, they've gone from the benevolent, your friend that can help you make a great game to some sort of evil superpower that people want to keep at arm's length, and an evil superpower that can't even make money. So they're in a bit of a mess.
I think there was a race to the bottom, like a couple of years ago, a lot longer than that, many years ago, there was kind of a bit of a race to the bottom, started by Unity, and that Unreal had to adapt to. And this is all kind of, on the one hand, a problem of its own making, trying to get massive market share.
Yeah.
And I don't think anyone is criticizing the fact that Unity needs to make money. I think people want it to be a successful business for everything it does. It's a really good company. It's a really good, really good tool, but they just lost a lot of trust in that one decision, and they didn't seemingly tell developers they were going to do it. And well, obviously this has been discussed loads, but that was like the issue there.
Well, if there's one sector you can trust to have a sensible, level-headed reaction to any changes in technology or business, it's the games industry. I'm going to stop you there, guys, because again, we just need to keep things moving forward. But again, one of these topics that we could dedicate an entire episode to, and maybe we will sometime in the future. Aaron, weekend views. What's in your inbox?
Yeah, so Monster Hunter Now is already coming up on its 6-month anniversary.
Wow.
It's on March 14th, which has just flown by. I've been covering this game since before it came out, and the fact it's nearly 6 months already is kind of crazy. It's been an interesting game to follow over the months. Obviously, it did incredibly well when it launched. I think whatever happens from here, it's safely Niantic's number two for now, behind Pokemon Go. It's done far better than their other games and most of AR games in general. Essentially they've revealed their plans for the half-year anniversary, so they're going to be doing sort of limited time pack sales, like bundles for different items and stuff, which is fairly standard anniversary practice, but should make them a bit more money. But more interestingly, they're changing how the monster spawns work for a couple of weeks. So usually in the game, obviously they want people to walk around and find different monsters, but if you stay in one place, they respawn every 3 hours. Or not necessarily the same monster, but if you defeat something 3 hours later, there'll be a new thing there, roughly. But they're changing that to every hour for the anniversary.
Oh, cool.
Which I think is a really smart business move, because it without them having to make any new content, it's already giving people more reasons to play more frequently. And the game's largely monetized around buying like potions, because if your character runs out of health or gets low on health, you need to heal them up to keep fighting. So, a big part of the monetization is around potions, so you can actually keep playing the game. So it seems like a really natural, indirect monetization tactic to just give people more to do so that they need to spend more money to keep doing the things. So that seems like a good idea. And from the player's side, if you want to play more, you can, because there's going to be more to do more often, which means you might have to spend a bit more to keep up. It looks like it's going to be an interesting month for them. Obviously, they're bringing new content as well, but I think that's the real standout factor, that just that simple change, essentially tripling the amount people can do, could have big implications.
It seems like they needed to make some sort of change, because I took a look at the revenue, and it is a successful game, but and still successful in context. So it generated $7 million, which is great, let's be honest. But that's down from $20 million in January at a peak of $44 million in October, according to App Magic. So it seems like revenue is going down. Whether that continues, I guess they had to do something. And maybe this is part of that plan.
I wonder whether they're going to keep it, because at the moment they've said it's just for the anniversary period. But it just makes sense. Give people more to do with little work on their end. Just increasing the spawn rate automatically means people are going to need to spend more. So maybe they'll keep it after the anniversary if it goes well.
That would make sense, yeah.
Of course, it could equally... the revenues do look quite significantly down, but it's hard to tell how much of that is from web store, people moving to web store. But it'll be interesting to watch over the next month, see how it goes.
Well, we're hoping that you'll bring back the figures and updates once the anniversary is over, and give us all an update, Aaron. Fantastic. Thank you so much. We're heading rapidly for the finish, but before we do, Daniel, what's been catching your eye this week?
Yeah. I just wanted a little comment to close. My favourite story was the European Games Developer Federation did their annual letter, mm-hmm. and their president is a guy called Hendrik Lesser, and he wrote a brilliant letter that I think everybody should go to pocketgamer.biz and search for EGDF and read it. It was great fun. We get machine gunned with corporate doublespeak and press releases about you know that mm-hmm. we've kind of seen before. We get an awful lot of good stuff. So when something like this happens and breaks through, it was great. I was reminded that he wrote a letter to the industry, and I was reminded very much of the old film Network. Starring Peter Finch, in which a news anchor goes crazy on air and becomes becomes a celebrity. And his catchphrase was, "I'm as mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore." And as I read Hendrik Lesser's letter to the industry, I was very much reminded of Peter Finch being as mad as hell. He was, the letter is great. He tells it like it is. You know, a lot of the time our job is reading between the lines, but this guy, you know, he made it very clear. Just not the usual statement that we get. He takes digs at big business. He has a go at Apple and Google. Says what everyone's thinking. They famously don't get along with Unity, the EGDF, and feel like Unity is holding too much power. So there's a little barb at Unity in there. He describes some of the redundancies. As you know, he's disappointed in naturally disappointed in Britain, but describes some of them as an overreaction, which I think he might have some mileage in there. You know, I think there's a lot of knee-jerk stuff going on, and I think, you know, folks need to settle down and relax and think about future rather than be seen to be taking drastic action and letting good stuff go. So I think he's right with that. He has a go at VCs being stingy with cash. Like I say, this is it's solid gold. You should read it. VC's only investing in profitable studios rather than investing in the future. The green shoots of the industry. And he rounds off with the killer quote for me, which is he says, this is in quotes: 2023 was a shitty year. 2024 will probably be even more shittier." I hate to read it. But, you know, like I say, it's nice to have somebody telling it like it is. So, you know, when it comes to headlines, you know, Lesser really, really is more. But the truth is that he loves games. He loves game makers. He's fighting for them. And if he was running for president of Europe rather than just the president of the European Games Developer Federation, I'd definitely vote for him. So. Here's to you, Hendrik. He's reached out to me on LinkedIn, by the way, and we're buddies. So yeah, here's to you, mate. Hope you're listening.
Oh, fantastic.
Going to be his chief of staff for his election campaign.
There you go. If you're listening in, Hendrik, you've got a fan. So that brings us crashing to an end for this first episode of the PG.biz podcast news edition. We hope you enjoyed it. We hope you learned something. If you've not been reading the site, we hope that you'll use this podcast as a means to find all the latest, greatest stories and headlines that we're writing about on a daily basis. It only remains for me to say thank you to the team, Craig, Aaron, Daniel. We hope that you'll meet some of the other team members in future episodes. And in the meantime, if you would like to get in touch, you can. The email address is podcast@pocketgamer.biz. And we would love to hear from you, hear any of your thoughts and feedback. In the meantime, that's it for now. We will see you again in a week's time for the next roundup. And until then, take care of yourselves.